Indiana's founding fathers, like those of the nation as a whole, were pretty smart people. In drafting our bedrock legal principles, they established broad frameworks that have, for the most part, accommodated, if not steered, more than two centuries of evolving social mores, growing material demands, and shifting economic priorities, not to mention never-ending technological advances. Their uncanny ability to anticipate change, however, may have reached its limits with the emergence of autonomous vehicle technology. Well, how do we know this? Well, not even our founding fathers' 21st century successors, policymakers who grew up in the era of modern transportation, seem to have easy answers for regulating driverless cars, buses, and trucks. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll examine the General Assembly's first stab at navigating a landscape for which there is no map. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
What if an app could give a voice to children silenced by autism? It can. Introducing SpeakAll. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.
Faulting the federal government for being slow to regulate the development and deployment of autonomous vehicles, at least 21 legislatures and six governors have passed laws or issued executive orders aimed at promoting their states as proving grounds for the potentially lucrative technology and or determining how it should be rolled out on their roadways. Take a closer look at those measures, however, and you'll see that the vast majority simply proclaim an affinity for the technology and create some sort of working group to hash out the regulatory details. Is the proposal now before Indiana lawmakers any different? And what would it mean if it's enacted for Hoosier motorists? Joining me to discuss the issue are Anna Gremling, Executive Director of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Planning Organization, which distributes federal transportation funds in central Indiana; Senator Karen Tallien, a Portage Democrat and the Senate's Minority Caucus Chair; Warren Mathias, Government Affairs and Policy Advisor for the Indiana Trial Lawyers Association; and Andrew Berger, Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Indiana Manufacturers Association. Thank you all for being here. I very much appreciate it. Anna, let's start with you. Now, back in October, if I'm not mistaken, your organization sponsored, hosted at IUPUI, a summit on the subject of autonomous vehicles. You brought in some of the best and brightest on this subject from around the country. What was your takeaway?
Well, so our takeaway is we need to continue the conversation. There's a lot of industry and manufacturing going on, and a lot is changing in transportation as we know today. There's no clear direction on exactly what's going to happen, and so it's definitely something in central Indiana we need to keep our eye on and continue to make sure that we are partnering and having conversations on what we should be doing for preparing for the next generation of technology as it relates to transportation.
And does the notion of continuing that conversation require legislative action? I don't want to jump right into the meat of this, but I mean, can we continue the conversation presumably without? I mean, you had a summit. Other lawmakers are talking about this. It's not as if this has not been as if this has been some secret subject.
Yeah, no, certainly legal is a huge aspect of the liability issue.
So the notion of having legislation at this time is probably appropriate.
It's great timing. For the House to be considering, or the state to be considering legislation, and we're going to continue to have these conversations in making sure Central Indiana is prepared for the forthcoming technology.
Interesting. Is this the time to deal with this? We have a short session. Everybody talks about how quick it is, and I can attest to that.
Oh yeah.
Seems like we just gaveled the session into order here. Not too many hours ago.
Exactly.
Is this something that needs to be addressed?
Well, you know, you mentioned before that some states have done a bunch of legislations and other states have done study groups. I think what we're doing is kind of both. And one of the things that this legislation does is to preempt locals from doing their own so that we don't have a whole bunch of, you know, conflicting or different sets of rules out there.
Now, which some states apparently weren't as much on the ball, and in fact now have that so-called patchwork quilt approach.
And, you know, I am a big proponent of local control, local government, but this is a situation where I think maybe that's not appropriate yet. This technology is still developing. So, you know, if we just tell the locals, hold off. And in the meantime, we've put together, this legislation puts together a task force to kind of keep control and keep an active watch on what's going on. So I think it's a good piece of legislation.
And again, is the notion of avoiding the local ordinances and the difficulties that would create for motorists, is that the primary reason to do it now? Because we know that the federal government is going to be addressing this. In fact, NHTSA, the National Highway Safety Agency, already has, everything's voluntary at this point, but they have their 0 to 5 scale about what constitutes, you know, a vehicle with no technology, driver-aided technology, all the way up at 0 up to 5, which I guess is where you can take a nap, read the newspaper.
Well, not to argue with you or anything.
Well, you can,
but
because
I'm not sure that we can know that the federal government is going to do anything. So I don't know that we can count on what might be coming from the federal government and when.
Well, not that you have to answer for the federal government. I know it's not your day to do that.
Please.
But I mean, if you would worry about patchwork quilt in 92 counties, potentially in Indiana, you could theoretically worry about it in 50 states, or at least 48 that you probably would be driving to.
That's also true. That's also true, and that is a problem. I agree.
I mean, you have a stake in this. Your membership has a stake in this. I mean, been years of tort precedent about how the legalities and the liabilities of this issue are handled, and now this potentially would upset the that established protocol.
It makes it cumbersome. It's kind of like three-level chess. But she's on to a point. To assume the federal government's going to jump in aggressively and regulate, I think is somewhat premature. We don't know. And there are some devices and things that we use right now in our cars that aren't regulated, and there's no safety standard for. The adaptive cruise control, for instance. In testimony in the House, the gentleman testified that he used to be the director administrator. A lot of our technologies we use now in our car aren't safety regulated, or there aren't regulations for it. So parts of the vehicle, I think, that the autonomous vehicle may or may not be regulated by the government. And so the software companies are very aggressive. There's a race right now to be the first and the best. And how it happens, I don't know. Sometimes technology and the market economy moves faster than government, and that can cause problems. But definitely there'll be jurisdictional issues, local versus federal, state, three levels of government, three levels of regulation, who controls. But for automobiles, for the most part, safety regulations are federal, across the board, so you're not going to have the ability for Portage or Bloomington to say, we want a car that has a blue flasher or a red flasher. It doesn't happen. But certain other things are uniform from the federal level, but it's hard to predict what's going to happen. It's very interesting.
Because states, and again, I'm no expert on this, as you just pointed out, Senator, on these notions, but I remember when you look at constitutional mandates in terms of restrictions on trade nationally.
Right.
I think back to, for instance, Indiana administrations before any of your times that were trying to keep trash from the East Coast out of
New Jersey.
And the courts have said, no, that doesn't work that way. So one would question whether there would be similar sorts of jurisdictional issues here. Andrew Berger, your manufacturing colleagues and membership, you don't necessarily want to see something happen right now with this legislation or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I've seen some manufacturers say this just sort of puts handcuffs.
I don't think the bill as it stands now is something that the automakers can sign on to. I don't think we're very far away from an agreement that both achieves the safety goals that the governor, legislators all have, doesn't have the patchwork quilt, but has some level of state oversight, but still attracts this investment. I mean, I think everybody knows that Indiana is a huge auto-making state in the country. We want these companies to still have that really positive vision about Indiana. So throwing up a bill or a policy that is worse than most other states is really an unnecessary error for the state of Indiana, and I think we'll avoid that, hopefully, this session.
Now, we do make certainly a lot of vehicles, as you put it, number two, I guess, right? If you look at the gross
depends on how you measure
output
it.
Of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we develop a lot, though, here. And you look at some states that I think Nevada, and I don't know if it actually has a corner on this market. Some other states, I think, have jumped ahead of it. But back in 2011, I think it was the first actually to weigh in on this. But you look at, for instance, Michigan, which has this facility, I guess, is sort of the gold standard of testing, a 34-acre facility, M-City. I've seen estimates anywhere from 90 manufacturers or 60 to 90 manufacturers are involved there. California, there's setups with 50. There's Texas is trying to. Do we really stand it? I mean, whether we do this now or not, do we stand a chance of getting the economic development prize as by being a development? Is that part? How important is that to in your consideration of this?
We can't wait. We can't wait. It just because other states have already done this doesn't mean we shouldn't be moving forward. So continuing to take steps and working public-private partnerships, working with the manufacturers here and talking about the technology and making sure everybody is prepared and that we're anticipating the changes that are going to happen.
So okay, it sounds as if everybody's somewhat enthusiastic about doing something now, and we can assume the pluses are that you can take that nap behind the wheel that I described, read the paper, or do whatever. It's an inside joke. Maybe that'll be a web exclusive. We can get people to the web for that. But, I mean, is that there are counterarguments, are there not? I mean, certainly Andrew Berger just articulated one about constraints on manufacturers, but what about, for instance, the notion that if it's easier for people to commute, maybe we'll see more urban sprawl. Maybe we'll see more cars emitting toxins in the air on the roadways. That maybe certain people who are disadvantaged won't have access to the kinds of technology, and therefore they won't be on this superhighway of autonomous vehicles. Is there validity to any of those concerns?
You know, can I tell you a story? When I was in grade school, which was like 100 years ago, we were asked to do a vision of the future project. Come prepared with your proposal for vision of the future. And my vision of the future was, some people were talking about mass transit, and my vision of the future was a personalized transport vehicle that would get in the highway like on a track or something and take you wherever you wanted to go. I hadn't envisioned computers, okay? I didn't.
It was rubber band technology.
Yeah, it was.
Pull it back really far.
But the reason that I came up with that is because I think that Americans want cars. They want their own transportation. And we can't get any more sprawled than we are, really. That's just an American way of life and a culture that we've had and we've been building for, 70 years since the end of World War II?
We're different, too, than Europe. Yeah. You know, Europe was all bombed out and they had to have mass transit, so they got a vibrant rail system. We don't. We weren't bombed. I mean, Eisenhower came back, built the interstate highway system. He saw everything that happened in World War II and made us more independent.
Although we have seen, and by the way, I thought you were angling for a cut of the any royalties, or I should say proceeds.
I think the Jetsons stole her idea.
You're somehow with the violation of your trademark.
Jump in and just kind of disagree, like, to say that we can't get more sprawled, I don't think is an accurate statement. Just as somebody who's responsible for Central Indiana in planning, right, there are plenty of places on the outskirts for development and homes and, you know, suburban communities. And I think just to be efficient with taxpayer dollars, each time a new development goes out there, right, they're being served with water and sewer. We need to take into effect the agricultural impacts. Right. And so, right, there's a road that needs to go out to that development, even right with this type of development, with the autonomous vehicle, if people do choose to live further away. I mean, those are all things that we need to consider. The maintenance of roads. I know we talked about potentially these new vehicles having.
And people are supposedly moving close. I mean, we talk about the millennials, and I will disclose, I know this will be a shock, I'm not in that age group. We just missed it. But they want to move. They want to live, commute, you know, the old style, be able to walk to the bakery, be able to walk to the store. Does this turn that on its head, though? Maybe
it definitely could be a change in paradigm. Yep. So.
It's consumer choice. One of the things that you didn't mention was the incredible increase in safety that these vehicles have. And in the House committee just yesterday, they had a hearing, and they're going to study it further, the impact of distracted driving and how many people are killed for that reason in Indiana alone. This would be a game changer as far as the safety of the roadways if this technology is able to widespread.
That's an interesting point, because I looked at, for instance, 2016, Indiana had 821 fatal car crashes in 2016, 821. Now, the thinking here is that 94% of all automotive collisions are attributable to the drivers, either because they're distracted or they make the wrong decision or they don't make the right decision fast enough. Can one actually legitimately say that if this had been in place in 2016, for instance, that you divide, I won't try to do the math, but that takes us down basically to single digits in terms of fatalities, does it not, if 94% are limited? Or am I thinking that's overly optimistic?
I don't think it may be, but the point that was made earlier, how many companies are involved in this, they're all at different stages. The technology is, there's variations on what these companies are trying to market to the consumer. There are different states on how, I don't think we're there to make those kind of conclusions yet on what the impact's going to be. I mean, this is still, people are trying to figure out how this is going to operate on the roadways, and that's what we're hearing.
Don't say impact in this context. But I mean, you've all talked about consumer choice and what consumers want, but every survey I've seen nationally and otherwise, U.S. market, Canadian market, everybody wants, I shouldn't say everybody, but large majorities don't want to see automated autonomous vehicles. They don't want to ride in them, certainly, and a majority even don't want them to share the roads with them. I mean, even if the respondent in that poll is behind the wheel and there's some look over and there's nobody behind next to you, they don't want this. So is their opinion factored into this at all? I mean,
I think it's education. I don't think they know enough about it. And we've been through this before at the turn of the century. You might have been in an elevator sometime in your lifetime where there's a little fold-down chair. People were afraid to get in an elevator.
This was
without
back
a human
when
being.
Was in grade school, she was talking.
Maybe about the time you were writing that report.
I remember the elevator.
Yeah, and I remember operators. An old department store somewhere where there was a fold-down chair, and I asked, "What's that for?" And they used to have an operator. It's because people weren't going to get in the elevator without a human being in there running something or looking like they were running something. Yeah. And we have that same thing right now. You don't want to get in a car without a steering wheel, or you don't want to feel like you can't push a button and stop it. But the technology and what we're seeing with all the reports and the data out there, that it's much safer. And eventually, I think that'll wash away quickly. I think these poll numbers that people are seeing now can turn quickly once people see it and embrace the technology.
And the companies are really incentivized to bring the public along. They're trying to sell a consumer product here. If people think it's safe or it doesn't work right, they're not going to buy it. So all the manufacturers are really incentivized to make something that the public is comfortable with.
And that's what manufacturers have argued is they don't need a lot of constraints placed on them by, for instance,
regulation.
This group that's been proposed because they say that the market will take care of it.
Yeah. You say that, and I agree, but I sit here, and just 2 years ago, I got rid of my car that had a crank window. So I don't consider, it was just price point, kind of, it was, you know, for sale, it was cheap. And so there will be a mix, right, of, you know, and so the comfort level and just people adjusting and as cars get traded out, I mean, that's something to consider is there, as the technology changes.
But if people, and I think you're right, people, they didn't used to pump their own gas either, you know, and I guess if you don't want to do it now, you got to go to Oregon. I think that's the only state that still requires people to pump your gas for
Jersey.
You. Jersey. But two states.
Oregon changed it.
Oh, they did? Oh, see, I'm behind the times. I got to get out west more often. But I mean, so you might have some converts, but what about the diehards who love the open road? They want to be behind the wheel. Because all of these statistics about safety, the 94% reduction and so forth, I think that's predicated on the notion that there are no humans anywhere. Because even if you have 90% of the cars with computers driving them, responding to Wi-Fi and road scanners, and you still have the 10 people who could be the bad, who could disrupt everything. So are we getting to the point, Senator, at some point where you cannot drive? Not you personally, but
I think that I'm probably the oldest one in the group here, and I just want to say I think this technology is really exciting. You know, the idea that I would rather, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I think I would rather trust my computer than trust the 18-year-old who just got his driver's license who's in the lane next to me. So, no, I think there's a long way to go with this. I'm just hoping that it all gets there so that I can have one of these going up and down I-65 before I retire.
Well, how practical is this? I mean, I don't want to get into the I don't understand the technology, so I won't get into it. But a lot of it has to do, again, with GPS, with Wi-Fi, and with the scanners that look for reflective material on lane markers. But what about, we've heard in committee, construction sites where all of a sudden it says merge, you know, there's somebody has a flat, or you see the truck with the arrow blinking. I don't think that has time to compute to the space and bounce back down to the planet. I mean, will we ever get to the point that the technology actually can accommodate those sorts of things?
I think potentially. I mean, I think it's probably a question better more for the manufacturing, but it's amazing some of the things, some of the videos I've seen on what they're able to do. The IUPUI Traffic Active Safety Institute right here in Indianapolis is doing a lot of testing with detecting pedestrians out in front of vehicles and bicycles and the car's reaction time to that. So it's very, it's progressing a lot in the industry.
Well, and what should the state, you know, we're sort of, thanks to some measures taken last session in terms of freeing up dollars for road construction repairs, significant amount, we'll see the trucks out and the bulldozers out fixing roads. What should be happening? Should these special markers and devices be going into roads that may or may not be used now, do you think? Or because the figure I saw, even though the 14,000 miles of state-maintained highways probably would be okay for this technology, the 84,000 miles of county and local maintained roads might not be. So, I mean, does this matter if we're not putting the right equipment and devices and markings in this construction boom now?
I think we're already doing it. I think there was some testimony during the process where they're putting chips at intersections in the signals. I don't know what they do, but I think it's all part of the big dynamic change we're going to go through with autonomous vehicles. Technology is moving fast, and there's incentive to do it correctly and to do it safely. So I think we're going to see a lot of new industries coming and a lot of new things coming in transportation and a lot of requirements for chips and things along the roadway that help us, because you almost have to have a redundancy. You can't just rely on one computer. You may have something along the road that communicates. There may be the requirement that this is really a boosted Wi-Fi combined with a 5G type thing, and it all works together.
But my call always drops on my phone.
That's the fear.
Unfortunately, running out of time here. But I mean, what this bill has not, HB 1341, has not received a Semgol negative vote. Came out of House Committee 12-0, 94-0 in the House. Next week, the Senate committee is expected to vote. I'm getting a rap signal. But basically, you have concerns still. You want to see it fixed.
Yeah.
How confident are you that since everybody's already jumped on board, that those fixes can be made?
Well, I think I'm confident that we're going to get it, because essentially you have to have a bill that the people who are investing in this technology are comfortable with, or else Indiana's not going to get the kind of activity that is also a goal of this bill. So, and I don't think I said it earlier, we're not that far away. I think there's some changes that can be made. Hopefully that's going to happen here in 2 weeks. But, you know, everybody shares the same goals, a safe, you know, road network and, you know, investment for this technology here in Indiana. I think we can get there.
Well, we will. This is one of those where we can all stay tuned. I thank you for being here for a very interesting discussion. You've hurt my brain thinking about all this, but it is worth talking about and thinking about. Again, my guests have been Anna Grimling of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Planning Organization, Democratic Senator Karen Tallien of Portage, Warren Mathias of the Indiana Trial Lawyers Association, and Andrew Berger of the Indiana Manufacturers Association. The federal courts are still considering previously enacted abortion bills, but that's not slowing down the push for more legislation on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of HANA News Service. You've never been driverless, I know. That's so this does not apply to you, but I know you're an expert on all things legislative. Anything surprise you from the roundtable?
Well, not really, but let me just tell you, I am affected by this because now I'll be able to actually parallel park, you know, with all these new devices and new technologies. But, no, and the reason that I wasn't surprised is the reason that, you know, behind the legislation is basically authorizing legislation. It doesn't do a whole lot. That's why there wasn't a whole lot of opposition. Well, there's no opposition. You know, and the
well, there hasn't been to this point.
That have been taken so far, right. But we haven't gotten into the heavy lift on this stuff yet. You know, there are all kinds of issues that involve the whole spectrum. You know, for example, liability. Who's going to be responsible in the event of some major malfunction? Will it be the vehicle manufacturer? Will it be the software developer? Will it be the driver? Who is the driver of the car? Will we allow people to travel in these things without an adult, without somebody who has been licensed? Will we even need licensing anymore? All kinds of interesting little special questions that have to be answered at some point soon.
And I guess even though no negative votes have been put on the board yet, either in committee or on the floor, some manufacturer groups, as we discussed during the roundtable, have said, hey, we can police ourselves. If you want us to get pre-approved by going to this panel that's included in the legislation as it stands now, you know, that's going to slow us down. Is there any validity to that? And will that argument resonate between now and the likely vote next week in committee?
Yeah, good question, because we've got a generational difference in this, and this is really a paradigm shift. And we've seen this with some of the other issues in the last year or so that have come to the table for the first time that have made us change our way of thinking. One of them, Senator Telling, was involved in with Airbnb and how that relates to the traditional hotels and motels and people who have to pay taxes and be registered and licensed. We saw that.
And the notion of local control. She talked about that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. We saw that with the question of whether Tesla should be able to sell direct to consumers or go through dealerships. You know, we saw that with all kinds of other little things that are popping up now. And this is another one. You know, this is the kind of issue that Millennial Caucus was set up to essentially, you know, deal with and kind of bring a nonpartisan approach to. And it's not the millennials that are behind this. You've got a 72-year-old legislator from Northwest Indiana, Representative Ed Soliday, who's behind this. He's more than twice as old as the combined ages of the two Millennial Caucus co-chairs.
Well, they didn't proclaim him, I think, in committee a honorary millennial, so maybe you and I can vie for that title as well. What happens this session? So we see something that's signed, that goes to the governor's desk and is signed, that with the notion that it's subject to change, because I guess in this, when we're talking about this subject, change is the one thing that's certain.
Well, this is just a framework. It's a shell, and this sets up the ability for everybody to go and run with this and to come back and deal with those pesky details.
All right. Well, we'll deal with those pesky details in the future. Ed, thank you as always for your insight. Appreciate it. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue researcher Phil Owens is creating new ways to map soil functions, improve plant growth, and increase crop yields, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.